For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It is December the 11th. We're in Derech Hashem, and we're in Chelek Beis, and we're up to Perek Revi. So this Perek is Be'inin Yisrael V'Umos Ha'olam. So the differences between Jews and non-Jews and how that developed. So it's how it developed and then where we are today. Both points. So we know that there are differences between Jews and non-Jews. Even though we look the same and we have similar mannerisms, human beings are human beings. But nevertheless, we know that there are significant differences between us. So the Ramchal explains where that comes from, and it informs how we look at the world today. So the Ramchal writes that we already learned that when Adam HaRishon was created, he was created in a way that was far greater than man is today, much closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, much more aware of Ruchnius, where Gashmius and Ruchnius had similar sensations. Just as we talked about this several times before, just as we sense Gashmius today with all of our senses, and Gashmius feels very real, as the Shiva Rav Weinberg used to say, those who don't believe that, those who try to say that Gashmius is just a facade, they don't believe it. They only believe it until they stub their toe. Once they stub their toe, they know that Gashmius is real. Right? So it feels very real. Ruchnius does not feel very real. Ruchnius is very ephemeral. It's kind of out there. It's kind of like a feeling, but it's not. Doesn't feel real. But for Adam HaRishon, the same real feeling that we have with the physical world, he had also with the spiritual world. There was an equal balance of awareness of the Gashmius and the Ruchnius. With the Chet of Adam HaRishon, we know that he and all human beings diminished. And the state we're in today is a much diminished state from where Adam HaRishon was originally created. And we sense Gashmius as real. We sense Ruchnius as something which is kind of out there. We don't really grasp it well. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is hidden. And the human being as an entity is now much more Gashmi, which is a negative. We have been diminished. Now, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we've talked about several times, the goal of the world is for everybody to get into Olam Haba. That's the goal. Olam Haba is after Tchiyas HaMeisim. Or maybe it is Tchiyas HaMeisim. But that's the goal. We talked about how Hashem has stacked the deck in a way where it's easier to get into Olam Haba, where more people can make it. Either through being the scapper for their averos, or through getting in on the coattails of others, various ways of getting into Olam Haba. That's on an individual basis. On a whole, the world, the universe, is supposed to get to a certain place, a certain degree of shlemus. When the goal of creation is that the entire creation gets to a certain point, and that's a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The only entity that is able to affect whether the world gets there, or I should say when the world gets there, because we know it's going to get there one way or another. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make sure it happens. But the only entity outside of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is able to affect when it will happen, how it will happen, who it will happen to, is people, is man. Human beings are the only ones who have Bechira, who can affect those events. Everybody else just plays along with the decisions that we make. Adam HaRishon was much closer to that shlemus, not just for himself, but for all of creation. And had he made the right decisions, then he would have immediately entered Olam Haba without death, and in so doing, the entire universe would reach shlemus, and that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. The Ramchal writes that even then, Adam HaRishon had within him the ability to create doros, to create children. And those children would have each played a role in that shlemus. It's hard to understand what he means, because if Adam Rishon would have made the right choices and already gotten to the level of shlemus, what's there left for anybody else to do? But that he still nevertheless says that there is a role for the toldos, the children of Adam Rishon, to play. And they each would have had their job. And within the children of Adam Rishon, there would have been main players and sub players. There would have been those who are playing very central roles, very public, very central roles, and those playing more periphery roles in that overall whole, that overall shlemus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Now, it could be that all of this would have happened before Shabbos on that first day, which was Friday, because Adam Rishon was created in the morning of Friday, and he did the Averis that day. But according to Rashi, Cain and Hevel were also born that day. So that means that there were toldos in the world even prior to the time when Olam Haba would have happened, which is that Friday night, which is Shabbos. So could be they would have had a role to play. I don't know. It's not impossible for us to really know all the details. It didn't happen, because in the end he did the Avera. With the Chet, so now Adam still has those descendants. Would there have been as many then as there are today? Who knows? But Adam has descendants. Those descendants, there are those who are prepared or given the tools to play major roles, and those who are given the tools to play peripheral roles. The mashal he gives is to trees, that Adam Rishon has doros. Those doros are each a tree. The trunk of the tree are those who are playing the main role, and the branches are the peripheral roles. And that was already within Adam without Chet. Once the Chet happens, that still exists. Now, even before Chet, there was a gvul, there was a boundary by which shlemus needed to be reached. With Chet, that deadline is extended. It's somewhere down the line. Perhaps it's the year 6000, whatever it is, but there is a gvul. Hishtadlus, as he writes, always has a gvul. If Hashem gives us the power of hishtadlus, of putting in our effort to get someplace, there's always going to be a deadline by which that hishtadlus has to be done. And after that point, then nothing can be done anymore. So writes the Ramchal that once Adam did his chet, then Hashem gave a set amount of time. And during that time, he gave the ability for the main players of the children of Adam HaRishon, those would be what we would call the tree trunks, gave them the ability to make the correct choices, rise above the deficiencies that Adam had brought into the world, and emerge as those who would be the main players in reaching the shlemus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. See, Adam was the main player, which means all the human race were the main players. But once Adam did his chet, and now we were very diminished, all the human race were diminished, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a time frame for any member of the human race at that time. And at that time, the members of the human race were like tree trunks. They were the main ones. They were the ones who had the capability of creating whole nations. And they were available. Anyone at that time could have made the right choices and emerged as the ones who would restore
what Adam destroyed. This time frame was from the time of the Chet until the Dor. What do you think? Haflaga. Not the Dor Hamabel. Past the Dor Hamabel. Till the Dor Haflaga. Till the Dor Haflaga. Till the Haflaga. That was the time that Hashem gave for this, for anyone to emerge as the ones who would be the main players in restoring the world's ability to reach Shlemus. Now, the Haflaga happened in what year? Or at least, what year relative to anything else? When did the Haflaga happen?
After the Mabel.
Well, it did happen after the Mabel. It's true. Actually, the Mabel happened in the year 1656. That's the Mabel, 1656.
Another 1656 years later?
No, no, not that many years, no. Yeah, Avram was born already. Okay, so Avram was born in 1948. Right? That's when he was born. And the Haflaga is after Avram was born. The Haflaga happens in the year, I believe, 1996. I believe Avram is 48. Does that make sense? I believe he's 48 when the Haflaga happens. So that's 1996 is when the Haflaga happens. So, which is right around the year 2000. Could be that even past that flag, in another few years, or whatever it is, right in there, right around the year 2000, that was the time frame that Hashem gave for people to emerge as the ones who would be the main players in bringing Shlemus to the world. Those people would, through their own Bechira, reach a level that they would be elevated beyond the rest of the human race. Where they would be through their own Bechira, but then through Siyata Deshmaya as well, their Ruchnius would become stronger than their Gashmius. And even though they wouldn't be mamish like Adam Rishon Kodem Achet, because they're living in a world that is not Adam Rishon Kodem Achet, but they would have been people who have much more ability than anybody else. And they are inherently closer to Ruchnius. So, when the time came with Dor HaFlaga, Hashem judged the whole world to see who emerged. Now, it could have been dozens of people could have emerged, which would have meant dozens of nations who were like that. And there were many tzaddikim that lived from the time of Adam HaRishon until the Dor HaFlaga. There was Chanoch, there was Mesushalach, there was Shem, there was Aver, there was Noach. There were a lot of people. But at the end, when Hashem did that din at the Dor HaFlaga, only one person emerged as worthy of this job, so to speak, this position of being the one who is closer to Ruchnius than the rest of the human race, and therefore the one who will carry the burden, carry the job, the responsibility of bringing the world back to Shlemus. And that person was?
Avram Avinu.
He was the only one. He's the only one who made the cut at that point. So in Avram Avinu's time, there were many people who created nations. They didn't know at the time they were going to create nations, but the many people who became nations in Avram Avinu's time. But at that point, only Avram Avinu was the one who emerged with that level of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there were many tree trunks, as he puts it, who would then have many branches. But only one of those tree trunks became that Am Segula. Now, we weren't an Am yet, but he was the only one who was able to be the one to bring the world back to Shlemus. And as a result, only Avraham, and as Avraham moves down to Yitzhak, Yaakov, etc., then certain parts get cast aside. Ki v'Yitzchak ikarei l'chazara means ki b'Yitzchak not Yishmael, b'Yitzchak not kol Yitzchak. That means Yaakov and not Esav. They could have been part of it, had they made the right choices, they could have remained part of that trunk, but they ended up getting cast aside because they didn't make the right choices either. And that moves down until you get to Matan Torah, at which point we become formally an Am. So as a result, Klal Yisrael, and only Klal Yisrael, has the ability to bring Shleimus to the world. Even though the entire human race has Bechira, not just us, but their Bechira is insignificant compared to our Bechira. It doesn't mean that it's a good thing that when non-Jews do Averis, of course it's a bad thing when they do Averis. But if a non-Jew makes a Bechira, and a Jew makes a Bechira, the Jew's Bechira is exponentially more powerful than the Bechira of the non-Jew. It does far more. When you make a choice to do a mitzvah, and a non-Jew makes a choice to do a mitzvah, your Bechira affects the world in far more profound a fashion than the non-Jew's Bechira. And the same Chas V'Shalom with an Avera. The non-Jew does an Avera, and a Yid Chas V'Shalom does an Avera. The Yid's Avera hurts the world in a far more profound manner than the non-Jew's Avera. They become only assistance to what is going on. The main focus of creation shifts from the human race to Klal Yisrael. That's the main focus. It's as if Adam HaRishon before the Chet has now been distilled to Klal Yisrael and only Klal Yisrael. Yes, there are other, unlike Adam HaRishon, where nothing else had Bechira except for Adam, we're in a position where there are others who have Bechira around us, and they're also affecting things, but it's the difference between taking a boulder and throwing it into a lake and watching the ripples, and taking a pebble and throwing it in the lake and watching the ripples. It's far more profound and powerful what we do than what they do. And they can't on their own bring Shleimus. They can't do it. Only we can do it. They can be players, they can help, they can assist, they can do this, they can make it harder, they can make it easier, but ultimately it is Klal Yisrael and only Klal Yisrael that can bring Shleimus, which is the same thing as saying we're the only ones who can bring Mashiach, we're the only ones who can bring the world back to Adam HaRishon before the Chet, and then on past that to complete Shleimus. Nevertheless, Hashem did do a chesed with the rest of the world in that he did enable them to actually become Jews. They could become Gerim, in which case they become children of Avraham Avinu. They can, through a process which doesn't make logical sense, they can actually transfer from one tree to the other tree. They can move from one to the other and grab hold of the trunk of Avraham Avinu rather than the one that they were born into. It does not make logical sense, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu built that into the system so that even Umos HaOlam have the ability to make that jump. If individuals, not collectively, but individuals, they can do it. In the end, what about Chassidei Umos HaOlam? What about the non-Jews who do mitzvahs? So listen to the Lashon of the Ramchal. Says the Ramchal, V'ulam l'olam haba, lo simtza'ena umos zulas Yisrael. In olam haba, there will not be nations other than the Jews. That's it. What about the Chassidei Umos HaOlam? To their nefashos, there will be some sort of reality. There will be some existence for the Chassidei Umos HaOlam. In a way that they are kind of like an adjunct to the Jews. They'll be like kind of on the periphery, on the outside, somehow hanging on to the Jews. They will be secondary to the Jews, kalavush hanitfa la'adam, like clothing, which is secondary to the person. That's what they'll be like. Ubevchina zu yagia lahem mashiyagia min hatov. That's how they will get any of the goodness of Olam Haba. The aim b'chukam shiyasigu yosem is that klal. They do not have the nature, it's not within their ability, it's not within their makeup to get beyond that at all. That's as far as they can get. So now, instead of the focus being all of the human race getting to Olam Haba, the focus is all the Jews getting to Olam Haba, and as many non-Jews as possible becoming kind of like support staff, kind of being there as well, but in a much more diminished way in Kal Yisrael. That is not a result of anything we've done, it's a result of what Avraham Avinu and then Yitzhak and Yaakov did in forming Kal Yisrael. With the Haflaga, Hashem divided up into 70 Umos, and those 70 Umos are all diminished. They're all Adam Rishon after the Chet in a diminished manner, and therefore their ability to affect the world is completely diminished. And only one, that's Kal Yisrael, above the 70, has become the one that our choices make a difference. Our choices make a huge difference. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done was decided with Avraham Avinu that all the other Umos would immediately cease to exist. Just have Avraham Avinu and Kal Yisrael. And it would be like Adam Rishon again. And he could have said, Avraham Avinu emerged as the one who is Shaykh to do what Adam Rishon was supposed to do. So now, just get rid of everybody else and let Avraham start over again. That's what he could have done. But he didn't do that. Instead, he kept the rest of the Umos around as this secondary role. But it's important to note that they are inherently diminished. Inherently diminished from where we are. We are inherently elevated. They are inherently diminished. That can't be changed. Unless they become Gerim, no matter what, they're inherently diminished. Even if they're Chassidei Umos HaOlam, which means they keep the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, even the Rambam writes, Chassidei Umos HaOlam is someone, is a non-Jew who keeps Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, L'shem Shamayim. Not because it's moral, not because it's right, not because it feels good, not because he wants to be nice to people, but because Hashem said so. That's Chassidei Umos HaOlam. Even then, they're not on our level. Even then, they are only still able to reach this level of like the clothing on the person.
Does it matter who they consider Hashem?
It doesn't matter as long as it's not an idol. It doesn't matter what name you give him. Right? What difference does it make if you call Hashem Hashem or God or whatever?
I'm like a righteous Christian.
Depends if you call Christianity Avodah Zarah or not. Christianity is shituf. Christianity, they believe in the at least their doctrine. I don't know what each individual Christian believes, but their doctrine seems to be that they believe in Hashem, but then other beings of power as well. That's called shituf, like for Lashon Shutfus, partnership. There's more than one. So that's a major debate, which I'm actually going to be speaking about on December 25th here in the Beis Medrash. You may have seen the flyers. but that
what did the flyer say? What did the flyer say?
It's Merry December 25th. Can we say the word Xmas? Right. That dependent largely on whether Christianity is Avodah Zarah or not. That's part of the major question. Islam does not appear to be Avodah Zarah. They believe one God, and the God has no body or form. So if that's the case, then it doesn't matter what you call the God. Well, there's one God. Hashem took the Shivim Umos and he put each one under the care of a particular Malach. There's a Malach of Edom, which we know Yaakov fights with. There's a Malach of Paras. There's a Malach of Madai. There's a Malach of Bavel. There's a Malach of Mitzrayim. A Malach of Yavan. They all have malachim. There are 70 malachim. Each one is appointed over a particular umma. The malach runs the show for the ummas. Now, the malach doesn't have independent power. We talked about this before. That doesn't mean the malach is doing something that Hashem doesn't want him to do. He's still only doing what he's programmed to do, which is what Hashem told the malach to do. But there's great distance between Hashem and the ummas olam. He knows what's going on. He told the malach what to do. But there's great distance from Hashem to the Umos HaOlam. But Hashem runs our world directly. We are directly with Hashem. In with the chet of the ego, the threat was Hinei Malachi Elech Lefanecha. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. I don't want that. I'd rather you destroy us. But the threat was to downgrade Klal Yisrael to having a Malach as the go-between between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, rather than straight with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the Umos HaOlam have a Malach between them. And now everything is dependent upon our choices. And only our choices really make a difference. Let me pause here for questions.
Like many people could have been, like Aaron Medina, there could have been a bunch of people who would have made that cut off. So why was, like if Hashem gave all of those people ability, why was it that only Aaron Medina made that cut off?
Apparently, only he actually was great enough. The other ones didn't quite make it. He may have been great, but not great enough. Now, what was the difference? So it's what made Avraham greater than Aver? Aver was alive. Shem was alive. What made Avraham greater than them? Now, he was a descendant of theirs, but what made him greater? What about Yoktan? We know Yoktan was... Yoktan has 13 children, each of which is one of the Shivim Umos. Rashi says in Parshas Noach, the reason why Yoktan deserved to have 13 umos is because he was maktin himself. He was very humble. That's a tzidkus, and that's what he deserved. But nevertheless, he didn't become Klal Yisrael. So apparently, Avraham had a quality, or had more mesiras nefesh, that put him above all the other ones. And the other ones didn't live up to Avraham Avinu. They weren't quite where Avraham Avinu was.
Did everybody in that time know that, like, oh, we're trying to make a certain cutoff, or this was like something that nobody knew?
It doesn't seem like it was an announced thing. I'm sure Shem knew. Mm-hmm. Shem saw Mitzushelach, who saw Adam. So I'm sure Shem knew. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't, like, on, you know, it wasn't advertised everywhere. Right.
If the world is really for us and we're really the ones who can change things, then really why are there so many non-Jews?
Okay, so he doesn't discuss this, but the real question to ask is it's the same question, just couching it a little differently, is why didn't Hashem wipe out everybody else and leave Avram alive and that's it? That's why did he do this? So I can't answer the question. I can only surmise that Adam didn't do the job and he was by himself. And it could be that Hashem's model now is different. The model is rather than only one person making choices and through those choices having shlemus or not, now that one person is in the context of many people making choices. It changes the whole environment, even though their choices are not as impactful as our choices, but they are making choices which does affect us. So I don't know for sure, but the world is a completely different place now that there's such an entity called non-Jews. There's a contrast. There's a constant contrast between us and them.
Right. I mean, my question is more like, why there are so many when, like, I hear why we need them and they also do change things, but like,
well, I mean
it's really
I don't know if it had to be that way, meaning the way he presents it, it could have been many people who could have emerged like Avraham Avinu, and then there would have been many other nations who also would have been, I guess, the Am Segula would have gotten the Torah, would have, you know, whatever the, right? Only one emerged. So I don't know if it had to be this way. If instead of that 35 would have emerged, then it would have been half and half. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know the answer. It's a good question. Now, with this context, so let's just think about what this means for us. First of all, when we interact with non-Jews, so we're not we are of the small group of people in the world who understand that there's a difference between us and that we don't mix with them, etc. But we're really very different. We have a completely different ability in life. It's not just different perspectives, different upbringings, different backgrounds. Our abilities and their abilities are you can't compare them. You can't compare them. You have to bear in mind that when it comes to Ruchnius, our ability, we're like the child prodigy that has the ability to be experts in whatever fill in the blank. If we're guys, I would say to be experts in basketball. You know, whatever it is, right? So I don't know, fill in the blank. Whatever you want to fill in the blank with, make it playing the piano, make it playing the violin. Whatever it is, we were born with incredible ability. They weren't. They're not shaykh to it. It would be like if the entire human race needed to be bodybuilders. Everybody needed to be a bodybuilder. We were born, you know, with bodies that, you know, were athletic and tall and strong, and you know, and they were born, with just meek and weak and like that. That's just the way it is. They don't have the ability. No matter how much they eat, no matter how much they pump iron, they're never going to get there. They're never going to get there. They can't. They don't have the ability. Now, I'm not including Geirus. Geirus is a different thing, because Geirus, they actually totally transform themselves. But without that, it's not possible. So when you're interacting with a non-Jew, so there's a problem in that they don't keep the Sheva Mitzvos. But you're dealing with a person whose ability to appreciate Ruchnius is compromised, is handicapped. And you have to keep that in mind when dealing with them. When you're dealing with a Jew, you're dealing with a person who has that ability. As a result, when you see a Jew who's acting like a guy, it's a travesty. It's talking about somebody who is squandering an unbelievable ability. If you saw a child prodigy who had the ability to play the violin like no one else could possibly do it, he had an unbelievable thing, and he was sitting there on drugs on a street corner and unable to do anything, you'd say it's a waste. What a waste of a talent. You have this brilliant person who could have been an unbelievable scientist, who could have come up with all kinds of cures to diseases. And instead, he's holed up in a bottle of alcohol somewhere in a bar. So you say, what a waste of talent! What he could have done for the human race. That's how you have to feel when you see a Jew who's acting like a guy. What a waste of talent! Here's a person who could have played an enormous role in bringing the world to Shlemus, and the people he's hanging out with don't have that ability. He's acting like the people who don't have the ability. He's acting like the people who never had, who will never have the chance, will never have the ability, and he's pretending to be like them. It's such a travesty, such a waste of talent. When a Jew, God forbid, marries a non-Jew, so again, you have to appreciate what kind of a mismatch that is. You have to appreciate how, aside from the fact that it's a terrible, terrible tragedy, but the mismatch that there is over there, that you have a person who has the ability to reach incredible heights, attaching themselves to a person who's, well, there's not much to that person. They don't have much ability to reach any heights. We would say that it's a terrible shidduch for someone who's a brilliant person to marry someone of very average intelligence. We say that's not a very good idea. It's not a good idea. It just doesn't work. They're not going to be able to connect, right? And the person of brilliant intelligence has to dumb themselves down if they're going to connect with the person of very average intelligence. The Jew who marries a non-Jew, they're dumbing themselves down. They have to dumb down their ruchnius, their ability to cling to ruchnius, in order to be able to attach themselves to a non-Jew.
It's also important to note that when non-Jews do terrible things, they do get punished. Of course they get punished. They do terrible things. But they don't have the ability to make things happen. Hitler, Yimach Shemo, did not have the ability to decide to do what he did to the Jews. He couldn't have. He wasn't Jewish. A person who's not Jewish does not have the power for his Bechira to do that much. A little bit of trouble, yeah. But to do the trouble that he did was impossible. It was only possible because our choices dictated that something terrible would happen. Because of the Averis of the Jewish people, as we mentioned when we talked about this, going back many generations, because of the cumulative Averis of the Jewish people, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought a calamity against the Jewish people. Who did he use for the calamity? Some Rasha, a non-Jew, who made bad choices and deserved to be the one to do it and then be obliterated off out of existence. So, but he doesn't have the ability to make that choice. Nebuchadnezzar couldn't have chosen to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. He could have wanted to have chosen to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, but he couldn't have done it without our Averis, the ones that bring it up. There is nobody, no guy has that ability. Obama does not have the ability to inflict major damage on the Jews. And neither does the Russia in Syria, in Iran, and the Russia in Syria, and the Russia, wherever it is. They don't have that ability. When Chas V'Shalom, we make wrong choices, our Bechira is very impactful. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows them to do what they do. So it's to me, it's such a waste of effort and a waste of energy, it's a waste of focus when people get all bent out of shape over politics, over, can you believe what they did? Can you believe? And the media printed this, and the media printed that, it's not their choices. Meaning, of course they're making choices. They are making bad choices. And they're ashamed for doing it. But don't become indignant, because they don't have the ability to make those choices. It would be like a 3-year-old chose to smash somebody's car. So the 3-year-old got in the car and drove the car and smashed it because he wanted to smash the car. So you get all indignant at the 3-year-old. How did this 3-year-old get the keys? How did the car get turned on? How did he reach the pedals? All right. Obviously, there was some very negligent adult who left the car running and didn't have the parking brake on and left it in drive. And the kid just happened to hit tried to push all the buttons and the thing moved forward and smashed. Right? The kid made the decision. But obviously, there was some very negligent adult that set it all up so the 3-year-old's decision would matter. If it wasn't for the adult setting it all up, the 3-year-old can decide all they want. They want to smash the car, but they don't have the knowledge. They don't have they can't reach the pedals. They don't know where the key is. They don't even know how to turn. They don't know anything. They don't have the strength to pull the gear shift. Right? The 3-year-old can make all the choices they want, but they won't matter because they don't have the ability. They don't have the talent. Someone has to have done a lot of wrong things to set it up in a way that 3-year-old could smash the car. That's what it's like. If the media or Obama or any of these people make decisions that hurt us, it's because we set them up. We set up by our bad choices, we set up an environment in which their choices can make a difference. But on their own, their choices are irrelevant. Meaning not that they can't do anything, but they can't do anything of substance. They can't do anything of significance. It's all small change. Big things are only because of us. And that's why when all these things happen worldwide, and all these, it's such a waste of energy. Such a waste of energy. Pass on this email to everybody. Make sure everybody knows. Dut mitzvahs. And that's all.
It's like, don't do averus. That's the way things are going to change. That's the only way things are going to change. There is no other way of making things change. Now, is there hishtavlus? Can you do, can there be askonis? You know, the aguda going, you know, working in the government, you know, lobbying. Chaim Yerim is an uncle who is a lobbyist for the aguda, the head of all the state lobbyists, right? So, of course there is hishtablus in that way, but it's only hishtablus. All of that is just our hishtablus to do things to help out. But that's no different than the hishtablus of going to make a living, no different than the hishtablus of going to ask, you know, petition. All this stuff is hishtablus. If it's done through the lens of hishtablus, I have no problem with it. You know, you want to sign petitions because it's my hishtablus. B'derech HaTeva, this is the only way to get it done. Okay, fine. But once we start to think that the power is in the hands of that government official, and therefore we've got to get that government official because he's got all the power, we're making a big mistake. He has no power. No power. Not for good and not for bad. He's only that three-year-old that someone left the car running and he managed to hit the right thing, the right button to make trouble. That's all he is. So it's very, very important to keep this perspective in mind of who's really calling the shots. And within the Jews, then, you know, the Jews who are acting like non-Jews, they're nebuch. I mean, what are they going to do? You know, they don't know any better, and they're tinochos shenishbu, most of them. You know, really, we're the ones who are the ones running the show, because we know, and we do things in a premeditated way. We think about it. We daven. We do mitzvahs. We have kavana. And we're the ones who our decisions are really the most powerful of all decisions. And therefore, you know, we should respect our decisions. Don't ever think that something you're doing is insignificant. Just remember this. Everything you do is incredibly significant. If that feels like a very heavy burden, good. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to feel. It is a heavy burden. It's our responsibility. We're Yidden. It's a tremendous, tremendous chus to be a Yid. A tremendous chus to be a Yid. That's the other thing. There's nothing that can compare to that chus.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.